Welcome back, everybody. It's Brainstorm Brewery here for another episode, and this week we truly do have a very special episode. That is because instead of just listening to Jason, DJ, and I talk about whatever and make fun of whatever and all those things that are fun, but, you know, maybe not as important as this, today we have a couple special guests. We have with us Michael and Ted from Cardsphere. How are you doing, guys?
Very well, thanks.
Doing great.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to the show. So, for people who don't know, Cardsphere is an up-and-coming Magic website, and we're going to get into it a little later with these guys and talk about where the website comes from, what it's trying to do, where it's going. But I guess we could check in with Jason and DJ first. How are you guys?
I'm all right.
Oh, you're going to deign to talk. This is the first and last time I'm going to talk on this episode, so remind me to do the Patreon pitch later, because that's important to me, and then otherwise, like, I'm just going to probably stay out of it. Okay, so if you're a long-time listener of Brainstorm Brew, you're like, this is going to be just like the Puka Trade episode. I promise it isn't, because if this gets too kiss-assy, I'm definitely going to go in hard on these guys. So, like, if you're worried that it's going to be another fellatio session like that Puka Trade episode, don't worry. I'm going to be asking the tough questions like, how do you make a sphere out of cards? I can't think of any more questions. I'll think of them later.
No, I mean, obviously one of the reasons that, you know, we think people are interested in this is because of sort of the tragic story of Puka Trade, or the cautionary tale that is Puka Trade. And I'm sure we'll get into that. But let's go ahead and just start at the top here. We want to break down for people. So give me the elevator pitch on what Cardsphere is.
Okay, well, Cardsphere is a trading platform that we think solves all the problems of all of its predecessors. So we use a push mechanic so that you're always, you know, sending cards out to people that want them. There's no negotiation involved. We handle the escrow of the funds. We're backed by the U.S. dollar, so no magical internet points. And we've designed the site, you know, to be a mobile UI first, so it's very clean and not a lot of distraction. And we're really plugged in and engaged with our users, and because of that, they have been helping guide us and helping shape the site since, you know, September of 2016. So
tell me, how long has the site been around? Didn't you guys get the idea for this? When did you open the doors? What's the backstory here?
Well, have you guys heard of Future Sight?
Or the site, set?
Not the set. That's what Puka Trade called their 2.0.
Yes,
right. And
the Puka, the one they kickstarted and never.
No, Corbin. It was Corbin. It was an Indiegogo.
I'm sorry. That's a good point.
So we. I was a Puka Trade devout user, and actually Michael and I worked together at a software company in Ottawa, Canada, and I got him into it. Actually, I sold him my last Puka points ever that I had, which is
he did.
You sucker.
Wish I could get rid of mine.
And I loved Puka Trade because I'm a busy guy. I've got a family, you know, I've got a job and two young kids. And I don't have time to negotiate to make my trades, but I still want the trades to happen, right? So I moved from being a deckbox.org trader into a Puka Trade trader.
Right.
And, you know, when Puka Trade looked like it wasn't going to be able to be a feasible option anymore, Michael and I and our third partner, Tom Reese out of Texas, we basically decided that we could do better and be responsible to our users and make the trade platform that we wanted to use ourselves, you know?
Okay. So, and this happened, when did you guys get the idea for all of this and sort of move forward with it?
So literally the day that Future Sight dropped.
Oh man. Okay.
So, when I sat down at my desk that day, logged into Puka Trade, and I couldn't figure out how to send a card. So
right.
I walked over to Michael's desk and said, "You can't believe this shit, man. You got to check it out." And I said, "I want you to log in and show me how to send a card." And he said, "It can't be that bad." And I said, "Okay, man, show me." And so he logged in and he couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me a while.
That's... It was so much visual distraction and fluff, and you know, just such a monumental, awful UI design that I just knew at that point this is no longer usable for me anymore. And of course, the economy was having problems at that point. So, you know, Michael's a world-class developer, and I've been working in software for 15 years in various roles. And so we decided we can do this better. We ended up hooking up with Tom Rees, who had a couple of community projects going. He had made a bot for Puka Trade. He and Peter Tweeg had opened PukaPoints.com to resell.
I know about this. Yeah.
To resell Puka Points before they were threatened with litigation.
Right.
And so, you know, we all had the same goal, which is let's make a trading site that really works and is responsible to its customers, right?
Yeah. I'll jump in with just a little bit of context and backstory here that people might find interesting. Now, I want to be really clear that we're not trashing on Puka Trade.
I am.
In my opinion, Puka Trade, that's fine. I mean, Puka Trade came in, they offered something that really no one else was offering well. They pioneered a lot of different things. They had a lot of successes. Clearly, they ran into some challenges as well, one of which was the economy. And I had actually an article series from Peter that I ended up never running because I just wasn't quite comfortable with it and wanted a response from Puka Trade and so on when I was running MTG Price. And I ended up never running it, but it was a very long, in-depth series of articles into the economy of Puka Trade and why it was destined to fail. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to give Puka Trade a chance to respond. And, you know, I had some conversations with them, but never really got the whole project to a point where I was comfortable publishing it. But, you know, lo and behold, here we are, the Puka Trade economy collapsed. Mm-hmm. I can't get rid of my points. People are offering double. Now they're sucking points out of the system. Is what they're doing now. They do a bunch of giveaways that you can use points for, and also now they charge you points just to have an account, simply because there are so many points floating around that there's no value to it. So mm-hmm. You guys, I mean, that you identified it, right? That was the number one problem with the website, is that it was more or less built on literally a house of cards, mm-hmm. and when it started crashing, it crashed very hard.
Yeah, and so we're trying to not reproduce those mistakes, because, I mean, they did very well, and you know, they let success get to their heads, right? And we're going to be careful to not do the same.
Yeah, but you have to give credit where it's due. They right. showed that the push system works, and overall, there is demand for this type of service mm-hmm. in the community, right?
Absolutely.
So you cannot deny that.
Right.
Yeah.
We're also kind of moving into a new phase. So we stayed plugged into our community for like 8 months while CardSphere was under development, and just tried to keep the excitement up and the feedback going from people just on our Reddit sub. And, you know, throughout that time, we've always had sort of an uphill battle, because we feel like we've inherited a lot of trust issues from Puka Trade. Thankfully, we're now more well-established. We've been in business and operating for 5 months now. And what we see beginning to happen is even the most die-hard loyalists, sort of true believers from Puka Trade, are now sort of moving over and working with both systems. And so we're kind of moving into a new phase where we're trying to distance ourselves from the Puka Trade bashing and trying to, you know, heal the community, right? Because we're all traders, we all want to be interacting with each other, and the Coke versus Pepsi nonsense is kind of tired at this point.
Okay, so
yeah, that's a bit of a challenge that we're experiencing right now, because we've got people who converted early and they realized, you know, the Puka situation, and we've got people who are, you know, hanging out there for longer than maybe other people think they should be. And, you know, we get into tensions like that, and especially, you know, on our public forums and our Discord, you know, tempers used to flare up a little bit, and now it's kind of toning down a little bit recently, and we're trying to get there because we understand that some people who still use Puka Trade, they might be invested in that platform, and it hurts them to see that platform going down, and
right.
It could be a material loss for them, and we don't want to salt their wounds too much with CardSphere. And some people blame us for the demise of Puka Trade a little bit, and maybe it's somewhat true because we started offering an alternative and people started jumping over, and it kind of accelerated the demise a little bit. So it could be true, and some people perceive it differently, and we just decided that we're going to try to distance from that negativity and kind of write it out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true, right? Just looking at it from an outside perspective, as someone who dipped their toes into Puka Trade but wasn't deep into it and hasn't really used a lot of cards for yet either, just because it's not really, that's not a market I generally have much need to participate in. But you guys are kind of the buzzards coming or circling the dead body of Puka Trade here, right? Trying to pick up the pieces and do it better and sort of
indeed
replace them.
Indeed, early on there was a phase when we kind of picked up and scooped all the disenfranchised ex-Puka users, and they became our early adopters for the platform, and mm-hmm. that is true, right? And the sentiment, anti-Puka sentiment, was strong back then. By now, I think those people mild down a little bit, and we're just basically in the regular growth phase, and no hate and animosity anymore.
Right. Okay, so it sounds like, at the core, you guys are fairly similar to Puka Trade, right? People have a wants list, a haves list, and send out cards to people who want what you have, right?
True. Yep.
So the base model here is mostly the same. So what, in FutureSight rolled out with a lot of problems, but they did solve some of them to a large extent. They had lost the consumer confidence. That was the biggest issue. But what makes your site different than Puka Trade? Why should someone who got burned by Puka Trade want to jump in?
Well, the number one thing is the protection of the U.S. dollar, right? So you can always withdraw your funds from CardSphere, and we pay you out with PayPal. Now we do.
So how does that work?
So we, you can build up a balance on CardSphere two ways. You can either send out cards to other users, and we will hold their funds to pay for the cards in escrow until they receive them. And when there's no condition dispute or any other problem, then we release the funds to the sender, less 1% that we keep as transaction fee.
So
if I send DJ, let's just work through with me for the listeners. If I am a new user of your site, I sign up, I ship DJ a $10 card. Mm-hmm. You essentially hold $10 of DJ's money in escrow until the trade is completed, and then it would essentially move over to my account minus 1%?
Correct. And then
okay.
If you want to cash out your money... So sending out the cards, or you can also top up your balance with Stripe using a credit card or a debit card. And we can't take PayPal in because PayPal out is our primary mechanism for cashing out, and their terms of service don't allow it. So we're only cashing people out with PayPal at this point. And when people cash out of CardSphere, we again charge them 10% or $10, whichever is more. So usually...
Whichever is more. Yeah. Okay, so if I send DJ my $10 card, you hold his money in escrow mm-hmm. until the deal is... And then I get $9 and whatever, 90 cents or whatever it is. And then if I want to cash that out, you will pay me you will pay me that amount minus 10%. So you'll pay me, like $8.75 or whatever, $9.
Yeah. That's correct. So,
So in some ways, this is a chance for people
right? If I have a card that somebody wants, I can get onto your website and I can send it to somebody and then cash it out, and you're essentially buying the card at 90% of its retail value.
Well, potentially, if you don't mind me chiming in.
Right.
No.
Go ahead.
So one of the functions of the site that I really enjoy is that you can set the price to what you want to buy at, a percentage value. So let's use Fatal Push an example, because it's a card that I'm out of stock at the shop all the time. I can't keep Fatal Pushes in stock. So one of the ways that I've started to get Fatal Pushes is I'll go on CardSphere and I'll put money into the system through just my credit card. So I'll say I want $300 in CardSphere credit, and I'll swipe my card and pay $300. And then I can put as many Fatal Pushes on my want list as I want, and I can set the percentage of that. I can set the condition, the foil, set symbol, language, how many I want, and also the price that I'm willing, the max price that I'm willing to pay. So I can say, in case Fatal Push, goes to $10. Right now, I'm willing to pay 66% of Fatal Push's retail value on the site, and I'll take 15 of them. So
it's not like Puka Trade where the card has a defined price. You essentially are making offers on a price on a card.
So like Fatal Push's retail price is like $7.60 right now, and I'm saying I will pay 66% of that, which is $5.04, on however many copies, and so that's on my want list right now. And any number of people can look at the current offers for Fatal Push, and they can say, okay, DJ's paying $504 in CardSphere dollars, somebody else is paying $485, but this person's paying $7, but they only want one. And then the person who's sending Fatal Pushes can make their own decisions off of that.
Yeah, I can see that DJ is the third best offer available right now at 66% of the index price.
Correct.
So
this is interesting. I'm with you. So one of the concerns, and this I'll bring it up because it's a question we had from a listener who asked if high volume dealers are the future of CardSphere. I feel like the buzzards are circling, looking to squeeze the last pennies in accounts. Mm-hmm. So you know, someone who, I guess the idea is, if someone like DJ who's going to turn around and sell that card at retail because he has a store, he's naturally going to pay. You know, it becomes a race of stores, right, who are looking to buy their stock, who are setting their buy price at whatever. It essentially is going to function a lot like a buy list once you have a lot of major dealers on there. Is that something you guys have thought about?
Absolutely.
And that's normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? Because if, somebody goes too low, they're just not going to get the cards. So it's good for the people who, you know, draft and want to offload their staples or whatever, or semi-staples, because the competition on the receiving side will create a healthy price point for them to use.
Right.
Think about it this way. Without it, they go to an LGS and get ripped off.
Yeah.
So where's the benefit, right? And they go on CardSphere. Yes, they don't get 100% value, but they do way better than buy list. Mm-hmm. So,
sure, and yeah, I guess. And people who want, then if you're an end user, right? If
yeah,
you
think
want
about
to buy
it
your
this
fatal
way,
pushes to...
the prices on CardSphere right now, and I don't mean the posted prices, the reference prices, but I mean the actual trade execution prices, pardon my technical language, are somewhere in the sweet spot between the buy lists and retail, because there's a healthy margin in between that, and this margin is usually split halfway between the CardSphere sellers and buyers, and they both benefit sort of kind of from both ends of the deal.
Right. So it's sort of like meeting
cutting
in the middle,
it in half,
as if like, if I want to sell a $10 card on TCG Player, or if I want to buy list it out for $6 to like Card Kingdom or something like that, if I'm going to sell it on TCG Player, I have to list it at $9 something, and then I have shipping and fees, and I end up getting $8. So it's sort of the same. Whereas like I can choose to buy list it to a store for $6, or I can sell it on TCG Player for $8, or I could just ship it on CardSphere for like $8 or so and get around the same amount.
Yeah,
sure.
And then you have the additional difference that with CardSphere, you can do those actions whenever you choose, rather than someone saying, "I want to buy this card." Now you got to get off your butt and ship it, right?
So there's one important point. I'm sorry, guys. I think we missed one important point when we talked about how we are different from Puka Trade, mm-hmm. and that I'd like to clarify something. When U.S. dollars, when money enters card sphere, it goes into our bank account, and we never touch it. So that's an important thing. It's sort of like a full reserve banking. We don't have points. We don't have any of that stuff. The balance that you have with CardSphere is stored value, because that's the actual accounting term that describes what we're doing. Right.
Right.
So and
so you're not playing with that money and reinvesting it. So like
no,
when I
no
when I throw
not no
$300
we're
in.
Not getting. We might be, you know, a little dumb here and old fashioned, but we're not investing it. It's not making us any money. We're not interested in you know, having any risk on it. It is in U.S. dollars, so there's no currency risk involved. Despite being, you know, a Canadian company, we deal with U.S. dollars exclusively. We obviously take a hit on accepting the money, because, you know, there's this standard 3% plus a fixed amount to process credit cards. But we apply the full amount to people's balances. An example, you add $100 to your CardSphere account and you receive $100, and
right.
we eat up the charge. We recover that charge when the money is actually leaving the system, and we got
with the 10%.
With the 10%, that 10% covers the incoming transactions and the outgoing transactions. And we did the math. We know, you know, what the cost of the money is in the system internally for us, based on the various blended cost of money entering the system.
And you'll have, I assume you guys have to pay taxes, right, on any money that you take in?
No, that's not how it works.
Okay.
We're
I don't want to get too into the weeds here. I'll trust you on
no,
that.
No, that's okay. We're pretty open about it. We're a purely service business. We're not selling and buying. We're providing services. And our services are escrow, matchmaking, dispute resolution, and so on. And
sure.
We are going to pay taxes off of our revenue. The stored value that enters the system is your money. It's not our money, and it's not our revenue. Our revenue is the 1% that we charge, and whatever remains after the cash out minus the costs of the money entering the system and leaving the system.
So that's a long way
our
of
revenue.
Saying that we can survive the classic run on the bank, guys.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, and that's the question, right? Is how, you know, cause it sounds like there's some sort of risk if everyone decide to cash out all at once.
Yeah, but it's an important one. It's an important question. It's an important thing to get right, you know, when answering that. And we get those type of questions a lot, and we try to be detailed when we're answering those. It's okay to be detailed. We're not afraid. You know, there's no shady corners in what we're doing. It's a legitimate service business, and that's why we're open about it.
So you're not concerned if everyone who's in the system today decided tomorrow they wanted to cash out, you'd be able to pay out every dime of that?
Absolutely,
exactly,
and
absolutely,
we'd be making money on it. There would be no way for cards to flow until people put money back in.
Right.
So far, we've cashed out about $40,000 in 5 months, and the overall size of the economy, despite that, has been continuing to climb, you know, a modest climb, and we're excited to see how big it can get.
Okay,
sure. All right, DJ, I'll let you jump in. I know you had a question.
Yeah, I did have a question. So as I mentioned, the primary way that I've used the platform so far is swiping my card, putting in my own money, and then putting cards on my want list that sell reasonably well at the store. So I might not be paying the most on Chandra Torture Defiance or on Search for Azkanta, Fetid Pools, Vraska's Contempt. These are all cards that I've received so far over the past few months that I've even been using the system. But one of the things that I've been curious about is, and maybe this is just my fault in terms of the UI or not understanding how to send things, but I was hoping there was a way to send cards without having to put them in my have list. Because the way I understand it is that you have to build a haves list, and that's not something really I can do as a store, because I can't micromanage a TCG player inventory while having a haves list on here, while having, like, a store inventory, and then moving in cards on and off of that as they come in. So, like, if I have some sort of weird random obscure foil or some crazy thing that's not going to sell well in the store, it'd be beneficial for me to just not have to have it on my haves list and just be like, oh, somebody's offering 75%, 80% on that. I just want to ship it out and not have to worry about maintaining a haves list on the site.
Right. So we just solved that problem, guys. It was, when we talk about being responsive to our community, that was the thing that we expected the least, because none of the three of us behave that way. We have full inventories ready to import, you know, day one. But traders started telling us, you know, I've got too many cards to behave like you, but I know what cards I have. So,
right.
So we've been tracking that sort of behavior since day one, and it's called, we refer to it as window shopping. And we just launched it, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Michael?
Yeah, roughly like that.
And what you can do is if you go to a user's profile page, you can see what they want, and you can add the cards directly from there. In addition, on a user's profile page, you can see a package that you can send to them, but not all of the logic that is active on the sends page applies there. So when you normally, I, for example, normally hide offers that are less than 75% of a card value. I don't want to, you know, see people trying to buy my fetch lands for 30% retail price, right? So I hide that stuff. And then I choose, like, an anchor package where I see one or two good cards that I could send for a profit, commit to those. Then I go to the user's profile page, and I can see everything that I can send them.
Right, and then because you see all the other nickels and dimes that you can add in there that make the postage worth it.
Exactly. So we've done that, and then our next sort of step from there is we've also had a lot of demand for people to from people for us to add a send anyway. So say you've got, you know, that one ratty old common and someone wants it for 10 cents or someone wants it but it's a 10 cent card and you only have 9 cents. The next thing we're going to introduce as far as window shopping will be the ability to say, okay, I don't care, send that anyway, and drain them to the last zero.
Ted, you're forgetting one more important use case.
What's that?
So we've got a similar use case for window shopping from the card page. So you know you're sitting on a stock of cards that you want to let go, and it's like, I don't know, foil, fatal push, whatever. So you go to foil, fatal push page, and you will see the top 10 offers.
Yeah, that's something
for the fatal push on the system. Plus, you will see the last 10 trades that happened. You will see some stats on those. You can see the actual percentages that were paid and the prices at that time. And hopefully that should help you make the decisions at what levels
you
want them to be shipped.
That's something I've used a lot because I saw Fatal Push again as a generic example. I just wanted to make sure that I wasn't the highest offer in the world. I just wanted to make sure I was the highest offer in my country. Because I felt that in terms of international shipping, I just figured that might get me some more fatal pushes because somebody sees and they're like, oh, somebody in Germany is paying $7 on fatal push, but I don't want to send a card to Germany. It's going to take a month and a half. So like, I'm like, okay, I'll buy them all at $5, but I'm in the U.S., so I figured I'd get – and I've gotten a decent number of fatal pushes this way. I'm not getting like several playsets a day or whatever, but like I've had at least like, I don't know, like 5 or 6 a month come into the shop just by putting money into Cardsphere.
Yeah, you see, and competition apparently works. It made you look and adjust and maybe go higher than you intended, but...
Yeah, and you're screwing over the Canadians. What are you doing,
that's typical.
I do have another question.
We don't even pay attention to this anymore.
I do have another question. So, one of the other feature I don't want to constantly reference Buka Trade, but like there's also a messaging system. So I'd noticed that users can send messages to each other prior to trades and say, and you mentioned that there's no negotiation process, but it's not that there isn't any, it's just that it's optional. Correct. So like somebody can message me and say, hey, I have this card. I see you're paying 60% on it because you're probably a store, but just in case you want to pay 70%, I just wanted to let you know that I have it. And I have the option to agree or decline or whatever. And then everybody goes in their happy way. But one thing I did notice is when I get an email about that notification, I do really wish that I could read that message from the email.
We can get into the details about it, but there is upsides and downsides of doing that.
Okay.
If you are in an active exchange with that user might be sending you 5 messages, and we're only going to send you 1 email saying that, hey, you've got messages, you know, go check.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah,
so and until you actually go there, we're not going to resend you this stuff. But if we just put the first message you receive there, you read it, and you never go to read the other 10 that might be sitting there in the box.
That's a good point.
So it's actually a fine trade-off between, you know, a little bit of convenience and a little bit of assurance
that
the messages get read.
Part of the reason that was only a slight inconvenience for me is because I haven't yet logged into the mobile site, and I didn't remember my password explicitly because I'm always recurring logged into my desktop. So, like, I could have just clicked on the link in the email and then logged in on the mobile site and then read it there, but I just didn't.
There's no mobile site. It's the same website that is actually responsive and works on mobile.
So. Right.
But you know what? We're listening to people, and if that's the option they strongly prefer, maybe we can make it an option and just let them, hey, you're getting notified on every email, but you get to read the message inside the email.
Yeah, so it's important to us that we never start thinking that we know better than users, right? So we have good reasons for the things we're doing, but our minds can always be changed. In this case, there's another factor, of course, which is that emails cost money. So we've been very good at keeping our costs really low and really lean right now, whereas other trading platforms, you know, have server farms to manage their package matching and stuff. We have one virtual machine container, essentially, and it's able to handle all of the traffic on CardSphere. And that, of course, is due mostly to the hard work of my lovely companion, Michael.
And Tom. So
I want to jump in here. I have some of the common concerns I've seen expressed. Going back to Buka Trade, if you wanted to trade somebody a 50-cent card, and we know that a lot of traders out there are using these sites to move their low-value stuff. They're filling out their commander deck. They need all this stuff. They're not just sending shocklands and fetch lands, right? You know, and again, I don't want to reference Buka Trade over and over, but obviously that, you know, you guys are building this off of the backbone of what Buka Trade built. If I want to take a bunch of cheap cards, I have to go with that buy list offer, essentially, because everyone's creating their own buy list when they say what they want to pay on a card. You know, the buy price on a 75-cent card is just going to be ridiculously low. Yeah, people are going to be competing on shock lanes and fetch lanes, but when I just want a 75-cent card to fill out a deck, that's not really going to get me very far. And then on top of that, I'm paying a 1% fee, which, of course, gets rounded up to the nearest cent. So essentially that fee, if I'm trying to send out 10 50-cent cards, I'm now paying 2% on every I'm meaning a 2% cut on all of that. And it essentially becomes impossible to take the dream of, hey, I sent out 1,000 50-cent cards or whatever, and now I have a piece of power 9. And that seems like something that, you know, it's great if you want to send out expensive stuff. Not so great if you just want to churn through things that you're never going to use, but random person somewhere needs. So how do you guys address, you know, that issue?
So right now there's a little bit of some artificial sort of externality to that, because right now, returning to Buka Trade, is that people are willing to take any cards to get out with cardboard. I know people who have taken stacks of, you know, uncaged Furies to get out with some cardboard rather than be left with points that are either way. So there is sort of a emergent story that you know, CardSphere is fantastic for trading, you know, value cards, but not as good at the low end. But when I take a look at our trade prices for the $0 to $1 bucket, I see that, you know, we've had 1,300, 1,400 trades in the last 30 days, the median price of which is 7 days, the median price of which is 71%, right? With 80% of those trades happening between 44% and 100%. So I think we're actually doing very well on the low end. It's just mixed in with the high end. We have had some people ask us to create sort of a fake set, because we do deal with sealed product as well, where we base our price on the MSRP and then you adjust from there. So people have asked us to create a fake set and do true bulk, which we have the capability of doing. It's just kind of hard to know where to put that. Right.
That'd be interesting. I mean, the real kicker there is that, like, everybody gets destroyed on shipping costs. So
right.
Yeah, but the for the true bulk, you'd have 1,000 commons or 100 rares, right? So it would be a lot of cards. You wouldn't be sending one or so.
No, I get that. So, I just mean if you decide to send like 1,000 cards in an 800 account box or whatever, you still end up paying like.
Yeah,
a bunch of
$2 or $3 shipping. Yeah,
I'd like to add some stuff to what Ted said. Yes, besides some unnatural demand curve that exists on Puka Trade right now, that fuels this perception, we are actually doing quite well, and the numbers, and we have the numbers to back it, and the numbers are on the front page. And everybody can go in and study those numbers, and we think that those numbers reflect the natural demand for those cards. So maybe it means that those cards are overpriced elsewhere. Maybe it means there's no demand for them. Maybe that's the real demand. Maybe the people who want to build EDH decks overnight need to pay, 100% for them. And that's their choice. I know some people do pay, some people don't. And it their mileage may vary, right? When it comes to sending, if I have, 100 random commons, maybe I'm not going to be able to form a profitable package. But there are people on our platform that have boxes and boxes of them, and they are routinely forming profitable packages and sending out cards that are often no more expensive than, 50 cents or 15 cents even. So it all depends on the makeup of your inventory. And maybe for some people, the right approach is to add throw-ins. So you choose an anchor card, and then you make sure that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards get attached to that package. So people need to find their strategy, and they need to understand that it's a function of their style and their collection or inventory, and the fact that the demand may or may not be there for some of their bulk stuff.
Right. It's
called bulk, for a reason.
So what you're saying is essentially, it's just kind of the way it is. And your guys' contention is that, rather than your system undervaluing the cheap cards, perhaps that was a flaw with Puka Trade and they were overvaluing them, and that people don't really... willing to pay full price.
The point is that we're not trying to value them. We're not trying to assign any value to them. It's the market that assigns the value, mm-hmm. and it's the market forces that exist in our platform that dictate. Okay, that's the percentage for that card, and that's the percentage for another card. So I think it's the it's the best and the healthiest approach to let the market decide rather than try to fix the prices somehow. Because any price fixed in time over time is going to create some kind of imbalances.
Sure. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, it just seems like one of the... Because that 1% transaction fee hits you on every single move, it seems like the goal of a trading platform is for as many cards as possible to move between its users. But just because of the way it works and because of the fact if I do send out a 50-cent card, that effective rate I'm getting hit is 2%. It's good if you want to trade some stuff, right? But it's not good if you just want to be a power user and trade a whole bunch of stuff and build four commander decks overnight and send out four commander decks overnight, because you take that 1% hit on every fee and it really adds up. So that's the one of the concerns that I think some people have about the site is that you get hit on everything, and it encourages you to make really trades that you prioritize and not necessarily use the system as much as possible.
We get that message. Not a lot, but sometimes we do get that from some of the users.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we usually reply by saying that, hey, it is still 1 cent on a 50 cent card that you actually got a chance to send out because of card sphere.
Yeah.
Would you prefer 49 cents on 50 cent card?
Sure.
Or sitting it forever rotting in your binder?
Mm-hmm.
That's the real question. And people who realize that they can efficiently extract that value out of their junk, they realize that extracting, 98% worst case scenario, whatever, 97, 96, doesn't matter because of the rounding, is still better than not extracting it at the end of the day. That's the real true story. And we are running very lean. We're not making a ton of money off of this platform right now. And when people say that we want this platform to be stable, we want you guys to exist, a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now. And we reply to them, guys, if that is to happen, and it is, and the plan is for it to happen, we need a stable revenue stream. And that 1% is the cornerstone of this. And if we basically allow transactions happening on the system that don't bring any money, right? For example, we say that, cards under a dollar, we're not charging you anything. That still comes with overhead. That's the overhead of doing the transaction, of storing the transaction forever in the database, of possibly... resolving the dispute because it was not an M, it was a SP, and you need an adjustment, and so on and so on and so on. It comes with actual cost for us. And charging 1 cent for it, I think that's nothing. That's my personal opinion. And Ted might have a similar one or a different one?
Well, I'm the guy that handles all the disputes on the system. So I can tell you that a lot of disputes happen on some really cheap cards. And so from that, looking at it from that angle, the 1 cent is kind of a deal. But, I mean, we're also here to talk with you guys, not just at you. So, I mean, is there something that you could see us doing with the bulk a little differently?
Well, the only thing you can realistically do, especially if we think about it in the sense that, you guys are taking 1% of a 75-cent deal, you're not really doing you anything either, is to eliminate the fee under a certain amount, right? If you eliminated the fee under all individual card deals under $2, right, or a dollar, and maybe the dollar would be the point there that makes sense, then at least people don't feel penalized for... moving a bunch of their cheap
that.
Stuff.
Why don't you just have a cutoff where there's a flat rate above a certain fee or something like that? You don't want to have people using your site to do just nothing. You'd rather have people say, "Oh, well, I don't want to do this little because I pay the same amount in fees if I do this as if I do that." So don't eliminate. They'll never eliminate the fees under a certain amount because then people just abuse that. But if you incentivize people to use the site more, that makes more sense than So, like, if you're doing bulk transactions, that's fine, but, like, do them in bulk.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys noticed, but when you sign up, we actually ask if you're signing up the account for a business.
Yeah, I did notice that.
And you know, that's so in the future, we can start developing out stuff, features or policies that are specific to LGS owners or people that are really running a business.
Up as a business or not.
We can flip that for you in the database if you need. but that's so, you know, and we take comments from the LGS owners very seriously, because I think there's a lot of room to grow in that space. I mean, if I were an LGS owner and I was sitting on all that stock and also paying someone, you know, $15 an hour to sit in the shop all day, I would want them pushing my stock.
Whoa, 15?
You know?
We are in the U.S. here, sir.
Nobody working in LGS gets paid 15.
We're in the U.S. We pay people with cardboard.
I pay people in magic cards, actually.
We don't even have the U.S. dollar attached to, like, our labor.
So
it's called Corbin credit in my stuff.
We have DJ dollars. We have DJ dollars over here.
DJ dollars? How do I get some of those DJ dollars?
Do sex slaves get paid $15 an hour in Canada? Because I might want to...
They do. Everyone gets paid.
In Ontario specifically.
Yeah, in Ontario, everyone gets paid $15 an hour. So
that's actually really funny, DJ. I did not know that we both had terms specific to our store for credit.
Did you make yours up?
But it's Canadian dollars, guys. It's not U.S. dollars, so, you know, maybe...
That's true.
Oh, so 15 Canadian, so it's like 14.90 U.S.? That's...
Oh, no. It's like $7 U.S.
So I think the takeaway from this is, I think once our revenue streams mature and the user base grows, there is an opportunity for us to review some of that pricing, and definitely we're open to it. As it goes right now, there's very little room for us to maneuver without jeopardizing our revenues to the point where we wouldn't be able to, you know, keep the lights on.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's,
I mean,
in nobody's
interest,
right?
If you kill all the fees and
it
puts you out of business, that's no good for anybody.
Yeah, so somebody's saving that 1 cent and then, you know, that's just crazy.
So this, I've got one more question before we completely go off and before I can recover it. But
go ahead, DJ.
So you mentioned a little bit earlier about, like, the conditioners disputes and, like, how people get kind of petty over, like, whether a 5 cent card is near mint or LP, but can you go into a little bit more detail about, like, who decides what's near mint and LP in terms of, like, conditioning or verifying or grading or whatever you want to call it? Because, like, as somebody who has worked at several different, like, vendors or, like, TCG player, like, I've conditioned and graded a lot of cards, and so, like, I just want to know, like, what kind of system are you guys using to determine who's right and who's wrong?
Is your voice going to be the same as random person who is mad about the card?
Right, like, I mean, if I get a card and I say, hey, this is obviously MP, it's not near mint, and then somebody else brings something up, like who's the final arbiter in that and why?
Well, most typically I handle all the disputes, because I'm not a developer, so we're trying to keep Michael and Tom, you know, fingers on keyboards, writing code and making Cardsphere better.
Right.
So I handle the disputes, and I would say that, first of all, our disputes are only about 3% of all trades so far, the bulk of those, 2% of those, are condition disputes. What I tell people, the way that I work it, because it's an impossible problem, right? I mean, we have a condition guide that's up on the site. We don't use images. We just use a description.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter what you do. It's a completely subjective thing. And I can tell you that for sure as I talk to many, many traders.
Yeah, for sure.
Every
I mean, like, some you can buy some cards from some online stores at near mint and then send them to somebody else, and they'll be LP. Like, you can move cards within, like, even huge companies, and there's different conditioning standards. But, I mean, like, Because one of the questions or comments I heard, but when we asked our listeners about what questions you had, is somebody said that they heard through the grapevine that your recommendation was to go to the LGS and get it conditioned.
No. No, we have had some counterfeits move on Cardsphere. Mm. We caught them early, and we were able to undo all the transactions and get everyone back their money. And I've got them now on my wall, and let me tell you, they're fantastic. I would never, you know, unless I was looking, I would not know. So that's
a whole other interesting conversation you can have with DJ and I. We've gone through a lot of counterfeits in our lives.
So I'm gonna.
But not
I'm gonna
me, apparently.
Them.
Apparently, I don't know anything about counterfeits.
Oh, dude. But I'm gonna take the counterfeits and I'm gonna punch holes in them and wear them like a necklace of zombie ears to my LGS, right? And try and show them off to people actually, because I think everyone needs to see how good, like how far they've come.
Are they actually good then? While we're on the subject, because
I've got some fetches on my wall, and
they feel normal. I don't know, man. And maybe Jason or DJ can correct me, but I have a hard time finding counterfeits that pass.
Most of them
feel very off to me.
These in a sleeve will pass 100% of the time.
Sure,
absolutely.
In a sleeve, yeah.
Out of the sleeve. So when I got my first batch of counterfeits sent to me, so I could remove them from the system, I brought them mixed with regular cards. And brought them into my work where I have several casual Magic players and asked them, you know, who can point out which cards are legit and which aren't. And no one got it right. So I think they're pretty good. I mean, they would probably fool me unsleeved casually. So those are the things that we sent to an LGS.
So that's a real concern.
Yeah, for sure. And
how do you is... You know, let's imagine the site grows. You have 50 times your users 3 years from now. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that then? You know, are you taking in hundreds of counterfeits a month and figuring them out yourself, or?
So one of the possibilities there is having a sort of network of trusted LGSs that are certified to make a call for us. That's one thing that I've thought about. I think that. So far, the community's been fantastic in resolving all of the disputes. And in fact, what we do for the condition disputes is I say, hey, can you please post some images of the cards? And I talk people through it. And I would say very rarely do I ever have to actually make the call. What is most common is people will say, yeah, you know, you're right. I pulled the card pretty quickly. And when I look at the image you're sending... This does seem like a slightly played rather than a near mint, and you know all I have to do is adjust the funds. I only ever make a condition call when it becomes absolutely clear that there's no way these two traders are going to come to an agreement, and most of the time that works. So far it's been very positive with the community coming together. I think there's a lot of people out there that are just excited to be able to trade again and have the cards actually moving and get the cards that they want. So no one's prepared to, you know, try and game the system too much, try and, you know, force lower gradings on receives to try and get that extra 10% value. I'm just not seeing it. In the long term, we have had plans since day one to develop... better controls for people to negotiate these things themselves. So allow people to change conditions once the receive has happened without needing an administrator to come in and make a determination. And one thing that we've sort of had as a mental exercise and may or may not come to fruition at some point is the idea of having some sort of community panel that grades cards. And
the tribunal.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there, early on, we had this idea that we could have a jury duty among the peers. Yeah. And when there is a dispute, random X people is selected and they say, okay, well, what's the condition of this? And
I'll tell you that did not work out great for League of Legends.
Also,
they
that's
tried the same thing.
Ridiculous.
League of, so I don't know anything about League of Legends. other than it's one of those crazy
they have
games
the same
kids
thing.
Play.
When someone reported something, it was called a tribunal, and it was normal players who opted into it for some pittance of rewards, and it was just incredibly inconsistent. You get people who don't know what they're doing. You get somebody who doesn't know how to condition cards, applying it here, and you get really, really, you know, it's like essentially like it's like any jury, right? Anything can happen.
Yeah. First of all, we haven't implemented this. Number two, it may or may not be a great idea. Number three, maybe it is a good idea, but it's very implementation dependent. So every single detail of how it's done, who is called, how it happens, how the voting is happening.
Of course.
So we realized early on that it's very complicated, and we just decided to delay this implementation as long as possible. And we, as we are collecting,
we're not saying it's
our
a
thoughts
bad
on
idea.
This
we're
and
just
feedback.
Saying that stuff with 1,000 times your user base have not been able to successfully implement it.
Thanks. So, yeah, I mean, things regress to the mean very quickly, and people on average are pretty dumb.
Yeah.
So
I'm not telling you don't do it. I'm just saying if you do it, it will be terrible. But I'm not saying don't do it.
I just be careful, I think is what he's saying.
We have rolled back changes that we've made in the past due to user sort of outcry, and we're always prepared to do that. I mean, it's...
what are some examples of those, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah.
What was our first rollback that we did, Michael? I'm trying to remember. Was it the image color or the color of the? I think originally.
Yeah, we tinkered with presentation of something, and then people told us that it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. It was early on, and I wrote so much code ever since.
Yeah, I think
I'm sorry, guys. We are deploying every week. Mm-hmm. Every week on schedule, we have new features being rolled out, and my head is so busy with the upcoming stuff that 2 weeks from 2 weeks before today is just getting erased.
Yeah. So sure. I think
okay,
you can find it on Reddit on the subreddit. I think there were two examples when we did rollbacks of things we'd released. You can search the subreddit for terrible. I remember Peter Twig posting that something was terrible, and we ended up a lot of people agreed with him, and we rolled it back. So
one of the this ties in a little bit this subject with one of the questions one of our listeners had is essentially what the roadmap is for you guys moving forward, but also will there be ratings of users? You know, when I'm looking at something and DJ's offering me $650 on a card and someone else offered me $675, is there going to be an eBay or TCG player like feedback system where you can see, you know, maybe it's worth taking a quarter less because this person has 99% positive feedback? Is that something you want implemented? And then, you know, if so, will those people receive priority in the rankings, or do you intend for it to always just be numbers based?
Well, since day one, we've always wanted CardSphere to be very, very data rich, and we knew that we wanted that to include a feedback and reputation system. As well, we also do want to eventually put in some gamification features where, you know, you win badges that show other people, you know, quick visual cues about what your activity is like. We'll be able to do that. So since we knew that was always coming, the internals of the database, the way that the ledger is kept, when we're ready to launch the reputation system, we'll be able to rely on a lot of the data that we already have in the database to let people see what kind of trader you are, right? So absolutely, we want that to come, and that's an important part of things. You know, when you were talking about earlier, I failed to mention when you were talking about people making the lowball offers, you know, I've seen that generate a lot of ill will towards the people that are making the lowball offers, and I think it actually becomes kind of dangerous, because then people don't want to do business with you because they perceive you as predatory. And when you know you have the full featured reputation system that, for example, might be able to show like how often does this user have condition disputes raised against them, or how long does it take for this user to ship on average. A domestic shipping versus an overseas shipping. you know, when you have all that data available to people, it's going to, you're either going to work it to be a positive for yourself and make sure that you continue to get a lot of card flow, or it's going to work against you and you'll have to correct your behavior.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've one thing that I've experienced so far is one of the cards that I got recently was a search for I almost always call it Search for Azteca, which is a Mexican restaurant, but it's not. I got a search for Azcanta recently, and about a week or so went by, and I asked the person if they've shipped it yet, and then they said that they're shipping from an APO address, and it usually takes a month to get there. So, like, that's something that maybe I wish that I could had a little bit more warning. Yeah.
We were talking about this right before the show, actually. There's a very dedicated user who's on a American Forces base in Afghanistan. I think he's on the leaderboard right now. Top senders by value and by quantity for the last 30 days. Bafdraft Gary. And
Yep. That is him.
Yeah, and they do a podcast, and we've been on it as well. And they're great guys, and he sends out a lot of cards, but they do take a while to get over to the States from Afghanistan. He tells me that he's soon going to be back stateside, and the trading will be back to normal with normal timelines. But right before the call, we were discussing, Michael and I, what can we do to resolve this?
Well, basically, chances are that we're going to be resolving this very soon. And if I may, I will briefly swing back to the previous question of the user rankings and stuff like this. I think that's another one of the questions that needs to be dealt with very delicately and needs to be thought about a lot. So any reputation system has a chance of doing good or bad for the system. It's a very tricky balance. So there is a lot of dangers to it. It could degrade into something unusable very quickly and misleading, or it could be designed in a way that it punishes legitimate users for mistakes for petty mistakes of their own, or maybe mistakes of their trade partners and so on. So it is, again, something that we will be doing. We are collecting the stats for it to happen eventually, but it's not going to get implemented unless we're absolutely sure of our plan of implementation. And that's another area where we're going to be consulting our community heavily on, and our community leaders especially. It's a complicated system to design, and we're going to need some people to poke some holes in it before it ever sees the light of day.
Yeah, I can certainly see a lot of situations where it can be gamed. If I complete a bunch of trades with DJ, so we each have 1,000% feedback, and we're now at the top of all the lists.
Exactly, and
that's the craziest thing about making a product for Magic players is they game everything.
It will be gamed.
We wanted to do
professional gamers.
We wanted to do some promotions for Ixalan, and one of the things we talked about is, hey, maybe we can hide something in the website somewhere and let people try and find it. And Michael's, no. Someone's just going to scan the website for change. Yeah. And you know, it's pretty frustrating knowing that, you know, they're going to game the system no matter what you do.
Right, yeah. So following up on this topic, just a pretty basic question. Who eats it if a card is destroyed in the mail or a package never arrives?
Cards Fair Terms put it on the sender. So
we're similar to
an eBay. That's not anything atypical in any sort of...
I agree, yeah.
A lot of people have talked to us about, hey, is there a future where, you'll have enough data to draw up, like, the tables to do insurance. I'm not sure that I want to do that, because I'm not sure that it helped Puka You know, I think that the insurance.
It was just a point dump for Puka, right?
Yeah.
It was just, we need to get points out of our economy. How do we do it?
No, well, no, no. But
it's actually create an inflation for them because they printed points to cover both ends. And for us, unlike Puka Trade,
it's money.
it comes with a real cost, right?
Right.
And unless we're mature enough with mature revenue streams and enough statistics accumulated, we're not going to do this because this is dangerous. When done correctly, it could become a modest revenue stream for the platform. When done incorrectly, it has all dangers and opportunities of
And that's one of the reasons
destroying
I asked
the platform.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I asked, because and again, not hammering on PukaTrade here, but a lot of systems, it can be very enticing for the system to appease both ends of it, especially if it's something like it gets lost in the mail where, you know, they can prove that they sent it and it just didn't arrive or it arrived damaged, because that happens. And it can be very tempting to say, oh, we're just going to refund your account.
Yeah.
And you kind of eat it, right?
We
saw what it can go bad
when
that's the approach you take. So that's what I wanted to ask. And it's just kind of, it's just a known risk then dealing with the site that if you're the sender, you're...
With PukaTrade, that system, it almost incentivized both ends to lose the cards from time to time.
Yeah.
And with us, we get the real stats, and the real stats are 1% or less than 1% of lost trades. And some people just say that, hey, they did the math and they're just okay taking that risk and they're just pricing it into their cost of doing business.
Yeah, that's what
we
do.
And that's about it. You know, the senders are in the best position to decide if they want to do that, when they want to do that, and so on and so forth. There's always a possibility for them to have the mail insured and stuff like this, and whether they do it or not, it's their call.
And
so we shouldn't be enforcing it on them.
And I should add, though, guys, when we get when a dispute is open between two traders, when I'm working that dispute and trying to help them negotiate an agreement and settle the problem, I also have access to a whole bunch of stats that aren't public. And one of some of those stats, for example, is I can see the min, max, and average price of shipments that have gone missing versus those that don't. So, you know, if low...
What do you see there?
Pardon me?
What do you see there on average?
Oh.
That's
not the
point.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I would see if... So it would be clear if, you know, someone who has, you know, a bunch of successful, you know, $2 trades... but has three unsuccessful $50 trades, I mean, that's going to warrant more investigation, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So.
Okay, so, yeah. Okay, yeah. While we're on the topic of the, just sort of the way the ins and outs of how the economy works, I mean, what are you guys seeing? Where does the number come down? I think most people are sort of trained that if they sell their card to a buy list, they can expect to pay 50% of its price, or get 50% of its price, and if they're buying, you know, they can generally get 90, they can buy it at like 90%, right? If you scour eBay and TCG Player for the lowest. What do you typically see on your numbers? Where do you fall in there?
Actually, if you guys don't mind, I could probably hop in, because as a user, like, I get to see this information as a user perspective. So that might be helpful. But yeah, like, Corbin, this information is actually like right on the front page, Corbin.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, like, and that's fine. This is not
like
everyone
little,
who's listening is going to see that.
Spreadsheet-esque chart of where you can see the number of trades that have happened in the past 7 days, how many of those trades were like less than a dollar value cards, all the way like up to $50 cards, and
we call them price buckets.
Yeah, and how many or what the percentage of each of those trades happened at. So most of the or 80% of the less than $1 cards, so almost all the less than $1 cards were at a range of 44% to 100%. Which makes sense because, like, a lot of the less than $1 cards are going to have, like, a 40 or 50% buy price. Like, I remember I recently bought a crap ton of Rogue Refiners at, like, 10 or 15 cents a piece because I need Rogue Refiners. So I paid, like, 25% of the value. And then as that number goes up, so as it goes from 1 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 25, etc., the average percentage goes up as well. So once you get into $50 cards, the average 80% of those trades are being sold at 75% to 91%. So those are like your Underground Seas, your Scalding Tarns, and those are being sold at an average of, you're getting anywhere from 75% to 91% on your card.
Okay, so that's interesting. Yeah, it actually, and that kind of makes sense, right? The higher up you go, the closer to retail it becomes.
Right, because then you're competing a lot more against TCG Player and eBay in that aspect.
Right, fair enough. Okay. Yeah.
And I'd like to use this opportunity to invite all of our users to make extensive use of that information that we provide on the front page. Make sure you understand what's displayed there. If you have any questions, ask them on our Reddit, ask them on our other media channels. We're going to answer every question you have.
Worth noting, I'm not, I just logged on, I just went to the site, I'm not logged in, and I don't believe I'm seeing these numbers. So for anyone who's listening, just be aware of that, that you if you're going to try to check this out yourself, you do have to be logged in before those numbers appear. Okay, so we're running out of time here, but one of the just generic questions I want to ask you guys is, what problems have you not foreseen? You know, we spent a lot of time talking about the problems you know existed in previous iterations of this concept and how you've tried to overcome them, the steps you've taken. But what are the problems you guys have found as you've been growing? You know, and the user base right now for the site is still very small, and that's one of the things, is that the high, you know, good offers on high demand stuff, that clears in and out pretty fast. But, you know, so what other challenges have you guys seen as you grow?
I would say that most of the, you know, I don't want to use the term fake news, but there's sort of, there's been a lot of sort of takes on our messaging that sort of spread around, that sort of thing. So, for example, the 1% transaction fee and the 10% cash out gets bandied around like Cardsphere has a 11% fee on everything. But not all users have that fee, because I use Cardsphere. You know, I put in, I think, $400 at the beginning, and now it's just trading piles of cards for piles of cards. So, I mean, I only ever get the 1% fee. I'm never going to withdraw any money. And there's a lot of users who never actually extract anything from the system, other than the cards, of course.
So, right, and that's the situation I'm in that made it profitable for me, was that I looked into it a bunch before I started an account, and I realized, oh, I can just put money in and have this be a buy list for me. I don't have to send cards or take a fee or cash out anything. It's just I put money into a buy list, and then I receive cards.
Yeah, and
yeah, I mean, so go ahead.
And we're a bit unique that way. So we have room within Cardsphere for a bunch of different ways that people can use it. And that, you know, none of us are professional marketers. And so getting that information out, you know, that you can be an LGS doing a buy list, you can be a human just buying cards, you can, you know, be someone trading piles of cards for piles of cards, you can be a collector trying to find the rare pieces by expanding your audience. You know, there's a lot of use cases for Cardsphere, and it's tough communicating that without muddying your message, right?
Right. Okay, so, you know, here's one of the, just, I think, one of the base concerns people have with the 1% fee, right? Is if I put $100 into the system and I make 100 trades, my money's gone. Now, right? I've paid 1% or however it works, right? A lot of my money is gone. I'm not sure exactly what the math all works out to, but you decrease, right? As you churn through cards, the amount of money you have into the system gradually depletes, and it goes to you guys. And I understand that that's a cost for you know, paying into the system and getting use out of it. Is that something you've seen a lot of pushback from users from? And if so, is there any, would you consider a subscription in the future where someone pays you $10 a month and now they get rid of all fees?
So we've planned since day one to offer a truly value-added subscription service. And we originally thought that, hey, this is where our real money that we're after is going to come from. right? So the 1% and the 10% cash out, that's going to cover our costs until we get there. Because we never wanted to paywall features that everyone should have. Because things like, you know, being able to trade foils or set max prices, those are all things that increase the flow of cards through the system. So you don't want to
difficult crippling.
Yeah, you don't want to cripple it. So what we're looking at is what makes the most sense as value added features, and we are going to roll that out fairly soon. Our pricing is going to be fairly modest, what we were originally thinking was that if you signed up and became a member, we would waive that 1% fee.
Right.
However, we have temporarily taken that off the table because we realized that so much of our current income that we use for our marketing and that sort of thing comes from a small amount of power traders that it's just not feasible. We would be revenue negative for making that decision, or at least we'd be
right because you lose 1%. You lose 1% a lot of times in exchange for someone's $10.
Right,
exactly. But, so we ran the numbers, and unfortunately, we had to apologize and say that hey, at least in the current makeup of our revenue streams, we're just not in position to do that because. We're likely not going to be able to recoup the loss from losing that 1% on the top traders with the subscriptions from the rest of the user base. Mm-hmm.
Is that somewhere you still want to go, or is that idea off the table?
This idea is at least for now off the table. Nothing is permanent when it comes to doing the best for the community and. Figuring out what works and what doesn't work, and we're open for all kinds of ideas when the right time arrives. But we don't think the time is now to do that. Mm-hmm.
We do still get
just cannot do that.
Yeah, we do still get a little bit of pushback on the 1% from the people whose primary use case. Is what you identified. So the people that really want to move the low end cards, when we're charging 1% or 1 penny on a card, if that person's moving a 10-cent card, well, they're actually being dinged 10% on that card, right?
Correct.
And so, yeah. So we have heard from those users. There's a really notable bulk Puka trader who also uses CardSphere, but he's. He's come at us with some strong arguments against the rounding up to 1 cent because of this. And, you know, so far those users are a really low part of our population. And I think most people, as I've said earlier, are just happy to be trading again and have that flowing. So they're not really that concerned about the 1%. In fact, we've been turning down money from people. People have been asking us since day one to do a Patreon or to, do an Indiegogo just to put some money in our pockets. And we just don't like the appearance of that, right? We don't want to poison the well and look like that other company. So we've always said thank you for your support, but the best way to help us is to trade cards.
So the true reason why we are doing rounding the way we're doing per card is that and we're not doing it per package, is that cards travel through this workflow from, essentially it's a workflow from one person to another, and they can go into disputes and be canceled individually, not as a package. So if we were to calculate something based on the package, that would complicate things like canceling, adjusting for condition, lost some cards. I forgot to put some cards in the bubble mailer, whatever. Since we are accounting and tracking cards individually, that's fine. We don't have the issue with bookkeeping and accounting and recalculating stuff. So that's the true reason we went with that system. And those issues of, oh, maybe this doesn't suit 100% of the people who are, doing the bulkish trades, kind of bubbled up a little later. we are thinking about ways of improving in that area. We may not have a solution, an easy solution that we're ready to implement today, but the time will come and there will be something to help those users.
Understood. Okay. Well, I think we've hit on a lot of the questions our listeners had, and thank you guys for coming on. Is there anything else you want to say? You know, obviously you want people to check out the site, but thank you again for coming on. If there's anything else you want to add, now's your chance to do so.
Speak now or forever hold our peace.
Well, I just want to open the floor up to you. I know we've peppered you with questions here for an hour, and I just kind of want to let you, you know, if there's anything you think you want to is important to hit on that we haven't yet, you know, I want to give you an opportunity to do that.
I'd like to address our current users and our future users, especially the future ones. If you are on the fence about trying CardSphere, you shouldn't be. You should go ahead and try. We are the real deal. We are here. We're not, you know, some guys from the street who are about to disappear. We're here to stay. The cost of trying CardSphere is nothing. You just sign up, see what's going on, maybe send out a couple of cards, and get the flow going. Go check it out for yourself. Don't believe people who are spreading, you know, misinformation about us. Do your own research. Ask the people who already use our system. Just do it.
That's why we're not marketers. But what he said. Yeah. But you know, funnier.
Well, yeah, guys. Again, thank you for coming on, and hopefully, you know, our listeners were asking about this because we've had a lot of people interested in using the site, and obviously, everyone's had, you know, their own experiences in this arena before. So we wanted to try to address some of the concerns as well as, you know, let you address the benefits of the system. I know DJ's had a lot of success with it as well. So again, Michael and Ted, thank you for coming on, guys. We appreciate it. And everyone else, thank you for listening. Thanks for sticking with us. If you have any follow-up questions here, let us know. If you're listening to this cast, send an email to brainstormbrewer@gmail.com. And we can follow up with these guys, and we can do a segment on it next week where we relay some answers. So, everyone, thank you for listening. This is Brainstorm Brewery, and we will see you next time.